was a highwayman. Along the coach roads I did ride, with sword and pistol by my side. Many a young maid lost her baubles to my trade.
Hans and Scotty, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. It is time to check in with the great Craig Buller Jack as we... I don't know, Buller, you don't have to say this, but we're mercifully coming to the end of the season for the Jazz. Hey,
No, you're not far off there, my friend.
Yeah. Before we get to the Jazz, I want to take you back to June of 94. What was it like in a newsroom on us, you know, on the sports desk when OJ is getting chased through LA in a white Bronco? What was it like from your perspective when all that stuff hit the fan and then the trial and everything else that came along with it?
Yeah. I remember it well, the whole thing. I think everyone, you know, in time, there are stories that you go back and say, where were you? Like when Tyson took a chunk out of Evander Holyfield's ears, you know, ear as well. But that OJ ride with Al Cowens through the streets of Los Angeles in the white Bronco was just surreal. You know, there was so much evidence pointing to OJ, and then his run through the highways of Los Angeles and the slow pursuit by police. It was like, are you kidding? Not just one car, but it was like in a movie, you know, like, you know, when is like, when are they going to yell cut, you know, and everybody gets out and, you know, shakes hands and okay, that was a good take. But no, it was real. It was happening right in front of us. One of the most gruesome double homicides of all time, and then the trial that, you know, really caught the imagination of the entire world, and in the moment when the glove don't fit, you must acquit. I mean, those those words still echo from Johnny Cochran, and I just thought Al Cowens knew more than maybe we ever found out from him. We were talking about it this morning at Shoot Around. I don't recall if he ever went to the stand during the trial. And I thought that would probably, since he was right there, what he maybe had discussed with OJ would have been asked in a court of law. But no, it never was. But it was a surreal time. And I remember just all eyes on the television like, this really is happening. And it's really, and why it was one of the most prominent, successful sports figures of that era. Because not only did he was a great football player, and I believe the first to rush for 1,000, he also then transitioned into acting and obviously Monday Night Football. So everybody had OJ in their, you know, in their living room. And for this to come about, it's still just it's a time that makes my head swim a little bit. But, 76 years old, and I guess it went with him, the truth, unless, you know, he wrote some papers. I think some people felt like he admitted it in his book. I read some of that. It's quite intriguing. But, you know, whether or not there'll be a paper that pops up someday sooner than later that he actually wrote, yes, I did, no, I didn't. It'll be interesting to see what happens over the next couple of days.
So I do remember the baby Jessica incident. I do remember Princess Diana, but I don't really remember the...
Oh, really?
No, I don't really remember the courtroom drama. So.
Oh, dude, I lived in... You imagine how crazy that'd be if that was going on right now with Twitter and social media and stuff?
Scotty, Hans, that would have blown up Twitter, which is now X, and everyone would have had everyone would have become a professional, they would think they were a legitimate lawyer.
Oh, yeah.
Right? They were playing the case, and there'd be so much out there online that your head would spin. And Hans, in 94, you know, there was nothing like that. That's why there was so much intrigue tuning in to anything OJ. And there were constant news breaks and constant cut-ins. And, I mean, it captured everyone's imagination, not only in this country, but around the world. It was the story of stories.
When the verdict came back innocent, what was the general reaction? What was your thought? But what was the nation's general reaction?
Shock. Like, I can't believe this.
Yeah.
We all thought he was, everybody thought he was guilty.
Yes. I mean, the evidence was overwhelming. And... gosh, Scotty, I mean, I remember, you know, the lawyers he had was, I mean, stacked to the rafters. Didn't F. Lee Bailey jump in at one point in time as well with Cochran and the Kardashians, their father was part of that group, the Dream Team, I think they were labeled, to come in to defend O.J. But I think the most iconic moment, and I tell you what, real quick, I have to go back. Just strangely, on the road last week, I'm watching Comedy Channel or something, and the Seinfeld episode jumps in with, at that time, it was about the same time Seinfeld and O.J., this all happened, and they had Kramer being sued or something, but the lawyer they had was an offshoot of Johnny Cochran's character on that show. And that's when I think they had a character, a woman, who was walking down the street braless, and she put the bra on. And do you remember this scene in the courtroom?
Yeah.
And if the bra don't fit, you must acquit. And everybody in the audience just erupts in laughter. But that's exactly what it was. Everyone was so focused on that comment. And that really was the defining moment, I think, for the jury. But what's strange, Scotty, you remember O.J. wore gloves over the or he put the gloves over blue surgical gloves, so they didn't want to contaminate the evidence. And so it was like, how could those gloves fit anyway when he had another pair of surgical gloves on underneath? It was just the most bizarre case, and everyone had their own opinion. But how could O.J., who was really the darling of the National Football League and what, the Naked Guns movie series? I mean, those were hilarious comedy. And then he became a football analyst. And it was just, it was a surreal time. It really was.
All right. Well, we've tap danced enough, Bowler. Let's get to it.
Three to go.
It's the three to go. No stars in the lineup tonight. Youth movement continues on. I want you to evaluate a little bit. Evaluate's not the right word. And I tried to ask this question to David the other day, too. And I'm not exactly sure the right word to use here, because I don't think that we should be evaluating whether it's a good job or a bad job that Will Hardy is trying to do, because they're throwing him in a really difficult, unique situation here. Sure. But how do you think he's handled this? Because there's a lot of learning opportunities for these young guys. He benches some guys the other day to send a message. He's working through a lot of things. It's not about wins and losses. It's about development. Kind of give me your assessment on how Will Hardy's handled himself in a situation that's not necessarily conducive to picking up wins.
Well, I think he's been put in a tough situation. I'm not sure if he knew when he signed the deal what really the test would be. But I think he's passed the test personally. Maybe I'm too close. I talked to him. Tonight will be for the 79th time in our pregame hit. I think he's been very upfront and truthful with the players in his evaluation of each and every one of these guys that have come and gone. Look, he's a good coach, and I think Justin Zanuck has echoed that may be too good at times, because they have succeeded and won more games than they expected during this retooling, rebuilding, whatever you want to describe it. I think he's still focused. He still pushes. I think the players, despite the losing streak and what happened after they traded Olynyk and Ochai and Fontecchio, it kind of gutted the emotions of the locker room, because Olynyk was a big part of that. And Ochai was a fun guy to be around, and so was Simone. So I think probably what happened, everyone then got the message what the franchise would be doing, and it was hard. But I think he's done a good job of still getting a lot out of players, and many are auditioning, I think is a good word. Many are still being, quote, evaluated by Danny and Justin and the rest of the staff on who fits and who doesn't, what pieces stay, what pieces move, which piece has the ability to bring in another potential player that will fit the puzzle. So it's not easy for the players. I mean, I've been around this locker room a lot on the road, and we'll be back on the road after tonight's game for the final two against the Clippers and the Warriors. But I've thought they've handled it as well as they can. And the one thing Will does do, to answer your question and come around full circle, I think he's – and this may be the important thing. Maybe you learned this from Popovich too, is that he's been up front. There's been no secrets behind the glass, the door – of what their roles are and what he expects from them. And from what I gather from players I've talked to, is that they only want to be told the truth. And I really believe that's what Will has done. to keep this team in a competitive mode. I think there's been a – I got to give a high five to Jazz fans who have still packed the arena to come and watch the young guys develop in Keontae and Sensabaugh and Hendricks and others. And tonight, you know, is a fan appreciation night, 41 games at Delta Center. And I hope fans come out and applaud, you know, themselves, because a lot of fans in any sport, and Hans, you know this, professionally, amateur, they come and go. Mm-hmm. But I have to applaud Jazz Nation for hanging in there. Now, next year, you know, we'll see and what happens in the offseason. But I do applaud what the Jazz fan base has done to support this team.
You know, we talk about next year, Bullard, and what I'm trying to do is ready Jazz fans to hunker down for a bit and enjoy what you got and enjoy the show and the food and the environment, the arena, and the show that's put on. But I think that there's a hunker down moment here, because the way I look at it, I think Golden State, Los Angeles Lakers, the Phoenix Suns, and the LA Clippers are about 3 years from aging out of their superstars with, you know, LeBron James and Kevin Durant and Steph Curry and Kawhi Leonard, you know, with 3 or 4 years, Paul George, you know, just the crews that they have. I just look at a couple of real contenders, Oklahoma City and Denver. And the way I look at it for the Utah Jazz, Bowler, is whether I got to sit through another year or I got to sit through two more years, at some point, this stockpile that you got, when that right moment hits and Danny Ainge sees it and he says, that's it. I just want the Jazz to have every asset ready to make the trade and be able to bring in the team that makes the run at the young Oklahoma City Thunders or the reigning champions of the Denver Nuggets, or maybe Minnesota stays together for a period of time and Towns gets healthy and stays healthy. But that's the way I look at it. But I don't mind hunkering down. But when it's time to pounce, they better pounce big, and there better be some type of gigantic payoff. But I believe that's coming, don't you?
Yeah. You know, I think it will. I think it's sooner than later. And Hans, you make a great point. Look, I think Danny obviously knows, fans know, this is a smart fan base. They can look at the standings and see who's high on top with Denver, Minnesota, and OKC. They're all in three different levels of development. OKC is the youngest, and they went through their tough times on the rebuild, but now they've gained the momentum. Minnesota has a plethora of vets who are kind of making a last stand, but they're making a push with Gobert, you know, Cat and Conley and others. And then, of course, Denver is just solid. They do it their way with Jamal and Jokic and Aaron Gordon and Michael Porter Jr. That's a solid, solid base. But you make a great point. The other piece of this is that there's several teams. I think this is their calling card this year. If they don't make a run to the title or get into the finals in the West, I think you'll see the Warriors and the Clippers and even the Suns make some drastic moves. And so what that means is you dismantle some players or move some players, and the Jazz are sitting there with picks that could easily be a part of the equation. I think everyone in the West and in the East, they know Danny. They know he's a player in the sense of making deals, which he's already done with Donovan and Rudy. And Hans, I think some other teams are impatient, and they've already made that run, and they've tried to push it one more year. You know, the window, they always say, of opportunity starts to close. And you know what? Golden State's in that position right now. Do they try to get something for Steph Curry or Klay Thompson right now before the window closes and then the value is totally depleted? So I think that's another part of the equation that Danny is well aware of in his rebuild of the Boston Celtics. And what he wants to do, and Justin, they've said it before, they want a wider window to give Jazz fans a wider window of opportunity to finally reach the pinnacle, and that's an NBA title. Not 2 and 3 year windows, but 6 to 8 year windows. And, you know, I think you're right, Hans. You've got to hit at the right time, and you also have to hit on draft picks like the Jazz did in 84 and 85 with Stockton and Malone, and even Big T in 83 was part of that original foundation, right? And so now here you are so many years later in the same position. And so Danny has got to use every piece of his expertise, player, general manager, of his past experiences and bring it to the forefront. You know, roll the dice and hit. Find that right guy to build around. You know, market and use your money wisely. And I think Ryan Smith totally trusts what Danny Ainge is going to do and how he's proceeding. It's not easy for fans. But, you know, if they see the plan or understand the plan, I think, hands to your point, makes it a little bit easier to accept. And next year will be another growth year with some new pieces. Then after that, I think you'll see the Jazz make a spike. And even may be surprised. We may even be surprised this summer, to be honest.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's interesting because it would be very, I don't know if Justin Zanuck or Danny Ainge heard me say this, they'd reach through the microphone and strangle me. But with the assets, with the assets that they have available and the resources that they have available, I think it would be very relatively easy for the Jazz to improve to a 48 to 53 win team very quickly. I think they could get there very quickly with the assets. It's like, you know, you had three boys, you know, I've got three kids, and, you know, when they're at that age of like 8 to, you know, 15, 16 years old, they get a little money in their pocket from Christmas or birthdays, and they immediately want to go and spend it. And so the Jazz have this wealth of resources available to them, and they could go out and spend it and get a 48 to 53 win team really easily, in my opinion. But the problem is, it would stay there at a 48 to 53 win team. And right. So you'd be exactly. Like, okay, you know, look, we're a playoff team. We're anywhere from a 4 to 6 seed, and we're winning games and we've got some excitement, but it's not going to go any further than that. So you can, right. You can take that next step and make the fan base, you know, a little bit more happier, but just know that's where you're going to be capped out. Or you can just wait a little longer. And I always tell my kids this a little bit, like delayed gratification. Just hang in there, hang in there. Don't take grandma's $20 bill and just spend it yet. Wait. Let's wait until there's something you really, really want. And then when you really want it, then you can go all in. And then instead of being a 48 to 53 win team, you could be a 58 to 61 win team and be on the verge of, you know, getting into the Western Conference Finals or the NBA Finals. But you just got to wait for that right opportunity and not spend that birthday money so quickly.
And Scotty just won Father of the Year. No, your analogy's spot on. I mean, you know what? If you got 20, can you use a fiver right now? Sure. You know what? What are you going to do? A draft pick? You may be going to, you know, pick up a free agent just to kind of, again, a young player who maybe has been discarded because there's not enough room for him, and play it smart. And then, you know what? You got the $15 in your pocket, and then later you're going to spend big. Scotty, that's the best way to put it. I mean, honestly. But it's, do you have the patience and the ability to say, I'm going to hold back. I'm not going to play my cards. I'm not going to play my full hand right now. I'm not going to spend the full 20. And I think that's really the way it is. You got a bucket full of first round picks. You have close to 30 or more million dollars in cap space. You have some young pieces right now that you still want to know if they're going to fit for the long term, or do you move them as another asset? And so all these things are in the mind of Danny Ainge, who ultimately with Ryan and Justin make these tough decisions with, though, I know Ryan wants to win sooner than later. And you know, how do you do that but not overstep the plan? And so, you know, it's like what they did. They brought in Olynyk, and they brought, you know, Fontecchio develops and becomes a 3-point shooter. And, you know, KO is a fan favorite, you know, T calling the clinic, Olynyk. I mean, how could you not like this guy? I mean, he's been around the league, but the Jazz were better than I think Danny expected them. And then again, you have to say why. Well, maybe the coaching schemes are right, and everyone bought in. Communication's good. So you've got a foundation piece with Will, and maybe you've got, you know, a Steele and Sinzabaugh at 28 who's going to develop. Maybe Taylor Hendricks at number 9, you know, is just a young guy at 20 who is now just beginning to believe in himself and get stronger both mentally and physically. And then Taylor takes it from there. And then Keontae, you know, it's hard. That point guard position is the most difficult. Whoever runs your show is usually an all-star and is always in the talks of being one of the most, you know, what, dominant players in the league besides a big man. But he has to be fundamentally sound and mentally tough. And I think it's tough when you're 20 to learn the mental side of it. You see some athleticism, but how are you going to develop on the mental side? Because that's where you separate good from great. And Hans, you've been around professional players that you say, God, they got all the qualities in the world athletically, but the separator, right? is the mental side. And I think that's what Danny Ainge knows very well. He was a tough guy himself in college and then the pros and then as a general manager. So I think he's looking for a combination of both of those. And those are hard to find, especially now. Then how do you evaluate it now at 19 and 20? I think it'd be tough. I mean, it's almost impossible when I look back at my life, what I was doing at 19 and 20, and am I going to be able to handle the rigors and the pressures and the practices and the demands every day as a pro? You know, the money's good, but do I still have enough discipline to actually achieve that? And I think that's the biggest test for GMs today. You know, Bailey, Big T, you know, he was a four-year guy. He was more NBA ready. These guys are one and done. And I think that's probably the most difficult part of it, is that you can't look into a crystal ball and predict the future and how these guys are going to respond as they grow and mature. And, man, you've got to have some great insight. And that's where the Jazz are right now. They've got to make the right decisions at the right time to open that window to 8 to 9 years instead of a 3 or 4 year window. And that's the biggest challenge.
Hey, Baller, before we let you go, how much NHL have you called in your life? Have you called some hockey?
About 60 scores. There you go. Then the horn sounds, you know. There you go. That's all. I got soccer in my wheelhouse. But hockey, I am absolutely in awe of hockey play-by-play announcers. Yeah. Because the puck, to follow that, and then the names that go with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Russian, Slavic, you name it. I mean, there's no Joneses that I know playing hockey right now. So, you know, it could happen. It's being pushed hard.
Yeah.
The NHL is actually beginning to make some noise about it as well, involving the Phoenix Coyotes. And so, man, if this city, this Western region gets baseball, hockey, and already the NBA, it'll be quite intriguing because Vegas is on that same path, right? So rivalries and, you know, just far enough apart to kind of build a little Western momentum in the world of professional sports, both in hockey and baseball. We'll see if it all comes to fruition. You know, what's the old adage? They say, build it and they will come.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, Ryan's the centerpiece of that. If this new arena or this complex that they're thinking about or trying to manufacture downtown, it's exciting, but it takes time to build, and obviously billions of dollars. And, you know, how do you jump over that hurdle? I mean, wow. But Ryan Ryan's a goer, you know, and he has dreams, and he wants to build and bring in hockey and make that a part of the sports entertainment group. And my goodness, think about the downtown growth if that's where they end up, you know, being. But there's a long ways to go, obviously, and then the commitment has to be made. But it's exciting, especially even with the Olympics in the air as well. Salt Lake, when I got here, man, has it grown. And the Olympics were really the first stepping stone in 2002, and look where it's gone from there.
Well, Bowler, we appreciate it. Finish strong. The end is in sight. And then we can talk.
I like that, man. I will. I'll just strap it and go, and three to go. We jump on a flight tonight. Clippers tomorrow. And here's the biggest issue. No one knows who's going to play. But I'm just glad there's still competitive matchups in the West and a little bit in the East. I mean, we know Boston's the top tier. But at least in the West, you know, there are, you know, the battle for one and the battle for the middle. And even at the lower half, is pretty much done. You know the top 10 teams, but they're still trying to jockey for 8, 9, or home court 4, 5, yep. Clippers and Mavericks. I think for the fans, I think the play-in has been a great addition because, you know, those last 2 weeks of the season, a lot of teams just 1, 2, 3 Cancun, right? That's always been the fun, you know, combo. But I'm just glad there's still competition that's going to be out there. And the Clippers will probably play because they want home court, and Dallas wants home court. So that's the beauty right now of the competition, of how close it is. Who we get tomorrow night and who we get to see on Sunday at Golden State, who knows. But we'll be ready to go.
Thank you, Bowler. Appreciate it. You're the best, and we'll talk again here real soon.
All right, guys. Have a great weekend. Talk soon.
There he is, Craig Bowler-Jack, right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.